You're listening to the Nature Connection Show on Natural Health Radio with Sarah Turner of Essentially Flowers Training and Moonflower Essences. Your weekly connection direct to the heart of nature. Hello and thank you for joining the show today. My name is Sarah Turner and I'm excited to be hosting this show on Natural Health Radio alongside my co-hosts, The Nature Kingdom. Yes, that's right. Every week I'll be helping you connect with an aspect of the natural world, talking to natural health professionals of all kinds and also many different kinds of people who care for our planet. What we all have in common is that we all work through the heart and with the heart of our planet. I'm really passionate about helping you feel more connected to yourself and therefore to all that surrounds you on this amazing planet. My own speciality is vibrational medicine, and I'm going to be sharing with you how this modality helped me connect back to my own self over 15 years ago, and in doing so, I've refound my own health and enthusiasm and confidence. So let's talk a little bit about what it means to be connected to oneself. Often it's easier to talk about its opposite, meaning feeling disconnected. In everyday terms, we could call this feeling down or depressed, sad or anxious, aspects that all of us feel often in varying degrees. When we surround ourselves with the natural world by going out for walks in nature, we automatically reduce the amount of stress in our bodies. Just the vibration of the woods, or the sound of the sea, or the smell or vista of the mountains, or even just placing our feet on the ground as we walk along, helps us to feel more fully present in our bodies, and that automatically enhances our well-being. When we ingest natural food, natural beverages, use herbs as medicine, as opposed to pharmaceuticals, essential oils to rebalance, relax and uplift, and flower essences to help us remember who we truly are, then automatically we reconnect, and we always feel so much better in ourselves. I spent the first third of my life pretty much asleep, doing the job that I was good at and paid a wage, yet did not inspire me at all. It was only when I became unwell that change was almost forced upon me. And isn't it strange how we resist so much, and that often we need to hit rock bottom before we can even begin to consider making changes? In this period of health challenges, I was introduced to flower essences by my hairdresser and was given my first bottle of essences by a lovely local lady called Sue. Something in me shifted at this point, and although I didn't feel hugely better immediately, it was as if something inside me had woken up, and I began to read every book I could lay my hands on flower essences. I guess you could say I was hooked. And over 20 years later, I've pretty much dedicated all those years to learning more and more about how flower and gem essences can remind us all of who we are, why we're here, and gently guide us back to the path of wellness. And that to me is reconnection at its best, a reconnection to ourselves and our heart's truth. It's the nature kingdom and the natural means of healing that have brought me back to balance, and now my whole life and business is about helping others reconnect to themselves through the heart of nature. I really hope that you're going to enjoy the shows on Nature Connections and that you'll join me each week to hear the guests that I invite onto the show share of their wisdom and how they have connected to the earth and have learnt so much about themselves and their specialities. So thank you for joining me and I hope you enjoy the shows. Okay, so I'm delighted to welcome my very first guest on the Nature Connections show on Natural Health Radio. This very special lady is Bridget Strawbridge, who I believe you also call yourself B Strawbridge. Is that right, Bridget?
My blog is B Strawbridget,
Yes.
and that's actually because nobody can spell Bridget the way that my name is spelled, so I thought it would be easier to say B.
Okay, but that fits in very well, doesn't it? Because
It
of what you
does.
do,
Yes.
which you are, I mean, I'm calling you here a B specialist because I'm not really quite sure what the name is that goes along with what you do. But Bridget raises awareness about the importance of biodiversity, including bees, soil, permaculture, and much, much more, as I'm sure you're going to find out on this show. So welcome, Bridget. Thank you very much for coming along and sharing your time and all your knowledge with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's very exciting.
So, first of all, tell us a little bit about how you found yourself working alongside the bees.
Gosh, well, it's a long story, so I'll try and shorten it. So I've always loved wildlife and nature ever since I was a small child. You know, even all the books that I enjoyed when I was little were all nature-based. You know, I loved the Moomins and all the Little House on the Prairie books, and basically everything that was about a simple earth-based way of living, I think. And I sort of then whizzed forward to sort of my my adult years. And about 7 or 8 years ago, I took part in a Not took part in my family and I moved to Cornwall, and the BBC came to live with us. Some a camera crew came to live with us to follow what we were doing, which was basically turning a small holding and a derelict farmhouse into an eco place. And so we had television crews living with us for a year, and the program went out. I think it was in 2006, and it was called It's Not Easy Being Green. And following the airing of the series, I had thousands and thousands of emails from people all over the world, actually, asking questions or making observations or sharing their stories. And so I decided to set up a charity because of all the questions that people were asking. It seemed that although there's a lot of information out there, people do have problems finding the information and knowing what to do with it sometimes. So I set up an environmental charity called the Big Green Idea, and I bought a double-decker bus, an old double-decker bus, and fitted it out with a solar-powered cinema and all sorts of beautiful things, beautiful fixtures and fittings, all made from natural materials. And I had window boxes on the outside of the bus. We'd take it to town centres and city centres and schools and festivals, and the window boxes I planted up with bee attracting plants. So the idea was that people coming to the bus could, whatever their interests were, whether it was gardening or skincare or clothing or alternative technology, we could show them alternative ways, more earth-friendly ways of doing what they already enjoyed doing. And so one of those was, you know, plant flowers for bees, because that's when the bee decline first started to hit the headlines. And it was mostly about honeybees. This is going back 5, 6 years. And gradually, over a period of a few years, I became aware that as people approached me, as people came towards the bus, I'd be thinking, oh, please let them ask me about bees. Let them ask me about bees or soil or permaculture or biodiversity. Because much as everything else is incredibly important, this is my passion. So about 3 years ago, 2, 3 years ago, I closed the charity and passed. I gave the bus to the Eden Project in Cornwall, which you know, so they carried on doing what I was doing with the bus, and I gave what was left in the bank to the Bumblebee Conservation Trust, and just basically started to work completely to raise awareness of the importance of bees, the beauty of bees, how amazing their world is, the difference between honeybees, bumblebees, and solitary bees, because not many people know that, and just to tell people that these creatures are in decline, in steep decline. And although initially I was doing this from a very human-centric point of view. I was thinking, you know, human beings need bees. We need bees for our food chain. I kind of went deeper and deeper, and the more that I spent time observing, watching, and being with bees outside, just because I sort of got to know them better, and I couldn't tell you when things changed, but at some stage a few years ago, I suddenly realized that I had recaptured something I didn't even know I'd lost, which was my connection with the natural world, and my wonderment of the natural world, and so for the last few years, and my awe of the natural world for the last few years, I just can't get enough. I can't get enough of being outside, and I've learnt more through the bees about myself and about their world, and about, you know, the natural world and wild and wilderness, than I actually have from all the books I've read. And believe me, I've read pretty much every single book there is about bees. So it's a growing. I'm working to make to help make other people aware of all of this, but the bees seem to be working to help me. You know, it's a symbiotic thing, I guess.
And I expect you've heard some very similar things. I know I have. There's more and more people actually speaking out about this nowadays, how we are actually the natural world in all different ways, whether it's through plants, the trees, or the animals that live alongside us, or the insects, in this case the bees, are actually speaking up now. You know, they're actually signalling in many ways that they're ready, or maybe we're just hearing.
But yeah, it's one or the other, and it's an incredible experience, a very humbling, but also very exciting experience, because it reconnects you with something that, you see, I had this as a child. You don't know until you regain it that you had it and lost it. And I guess there are some people who have been fortunate enough never to have lost this connection, you know, to have had continuity since their childhood. But rediscovering it, it's just fantastic, and it's, well, you know, it's impossible to describe, really. It just is. But through the bees, through watching bees, I've started to watch flowers now, and I've started to, from a scientific point of view, I've become interested in plant ecology, pollination ecology, and learning, just looking at all the different shapes, not just of the flower heads, but of the way they're arranged on the stalks. And then I'm doing this because I'm watching how the insects pollinate flowers. And there are, I mean, if you're looking at the whole planet, there are some 200,000 different species of creature that pollinate our flowering plants, and 20,000 of those are bees. 20,000 different species of bee.
Are there really?
Yeah. Mm. And then in the UK alone, we have 267. And these are numbers, you know, but they help you to put things into perspective and think, wow, goodness, I didn't know that. And they all, that the point is, you know, that's just a number. They all pollinate. They all do this in a different way. So the plants, the flowers, and the bees, all their pollinators have evolved, you know, and they've developed different physiological and behavioural patterns, so that the plant will attract the insect, and the insect will know how to access the pollen and the nectar. And, you know, there's some plants like a snapdragon. This is easy. Everyone can picture a snapdragon. Only a large, strong, big bumblebee can access a snapdragon, because it can push its way inside the flower to access the nectar. Whereas if you have something like bindweed or a foxglove, then pretty much any insect can access the nectar. But whether they pollinate it or not is a whole different question, because, you know, it depends where the pollen is in the plant. And I've been watching, and I've reached the stage where I now, I'll look at a flower and I think, right, I'm going to have a good guess at what sort of creature pollinates you, and then I sit and watch to see whether I'm halfway there. You know, whether it's a bee or a hoverfly, or a fly. Whether it's a honeybee, because the bees all have different length tongues as well. So bees' tongues, their proboscis, they vary from 5 millimeter to about 15 millimeter in length. And to put it in perspective, the honeybee's tongue is 6.3 millimeters long. So that's a short-tongued bee. And so a honeybee is not able to access some of the flowers with deep corollas. That takes a bumblebee with a long tongue. So you don't just get a flower and a pollinator. They've all, you know, there's this incredible relationship going on, and that's fascinating, and it's taken me back into the world of flowers again. And I was just in the garden a couple of days ago, preparing some beds to grow vegetables. And because I'll talk later about what I'm doing now, the project I'm working on, but because I have so much to do and I have 3 acres to play with, I had neglected these beds, and I was just about to start weeding them, and I thought, oh, hang on a minute, whatever that is absolutely covered in common carder bumblebees. And I didn't recognize the plant, so I went back and got out. I've got so many wildflower books, you know, that help you identify by color or by shape or whatever. And I discovered that this flower is it's one of the germander species. It's wall germander, and it's absolutely the most incredible flower for bumblebees. So I've left it. I can't bear to pull it up. You know, I'd rather have that plant than plant my spinach out, put my spinach somewhere else. So I only know this because I saw bees on the plant. So the bees are showing me, you know, like you said, like I think so many creatures are reaching out, different creatures and different aspects reaching out to different people. And it's, I mean, you know, it's not just bees. I love biodiversity, but I am focusing on wild bees, not honeybees. There are, I believe, enough people already speaking out to raise awareness of honeybee decline and the problems that the poor old honeybees are facing. So I kind of focus more on bumblebees and solitary bees.
You're listening to the Nature Connections Show on Natural Health Radio, with Sarah Turner of Essentially Flowers Training and Moonflower Essences. Your weekly connection direct to the heart of nature. So, can you tell us a little bit about the different kinds of bees that, for somebody like myself, actually, I mean, I have a small knowledge of them, and I see bees in my garden, but I don't know, I wouldn't
Which
be
is
very
which?
good at identifying them. So could you explain to us in a simple way, if that's possible, how we might identify some of them?
Well, the first thing is bumblebees are the easiest bees to recognize. That they're if it is big and fuzzy and has and is bumbling around, then it is probably a bumblebee. And the bumblebees, there could be some of the smallest worker bumblebees, might be no bigger than your little fingernail, and some of the larger ones could be, oh, I'm just to say, up to an inch, just under an inch in length, and absolutely huge. Now, the huge ones are queens. If they're absolutely enormous and they're bumbling around and got a deep, deep buzz, and then they're queen bumblebees. So bumblebees, they come in, well, they come in so many different colours. They're not just yellow, black and white. There's a bumblebee that's a beautiful velvet black colour with a deep red tail. That's a bumblebee. So there are 25 different species of bumblebee. And they are, you know, without getting into which bee is which, as a species, bumblebees are quite easy to recognise, and most people would have a good stab at saying that's a bumblebee, not a honeybee.
Yes.
Honeybees, a couple of clues with honeybees. First of all, when they're flying, as they're flying between the flowers, their back legs hang down beneath their bodies. So they fly at a slight facing upwards angle, a bit like Concorde, with their back legs hanging down. And you usually see more than one honeybee at a time, because honeybees live in hives of, you know, up to 50, 60,000 bees in a hive, in a colony, whether it's in a tree or in a beekeeper's hive. And when they are out foraging on flowers, the foragers tend to go back, and they, you know, they'll do this little dance in the hive to tell the other bees where there's lots of food. And you'll get quite a lot of bees at the same time.
Okay.
They have stripes and they're slender, so that would be a honeybee. Solitary bees come in so many different shapes and sizes that basically, if it's not a honeybee and it's not a bumblebee, then it will be a solitary bee. And the big thing, I'll tell you a bit more about solitary bees in a minute, but to tell the difference between a bee, any of those bees, and a fly or a hoverfly, because there are lots of flies that actually pretend to be bees. They,
yes.
They mimic bees.
Stripy, aren't they?
So like bees that as they whiz past, you'd be forgiven for thinking they would be. But the biggest difference is if you look close up, bees have long antennae. Flies, hoverflies and bee mimics have tiny, stumpy little antennae. Mm. So if it's got long antennae, no matter how tiny it is, it's a bee.
Okay.
Also, flies have fly eyes, big fly eyes almost in the middle.
Yeah.
Bees' eyes are more oval, and they're more friendly looking. Mm. Then another way to tell that the bees from the flies is that bees have waspish waists. So if it has a little tight waspish waist, mm-hmm. And it's not a wasp, then it's a bee. Mm-hmm. Flies are thick-set. So there's all these different clues to tell you mm-hmm. the difference between mm-hmm. Something that looks like a bee and something is a bee. But our solitary bees, so in the UK we've got, 240-odd solitary bee species. And the smallest one is no bigger than a grain of rice. It's absolutely tiny. It's black. Mm. The carpenter, the harebell bee. And it's you'll find it in harebells and other members of the Campanula family. And so insignificant. But if you look at it long enough, if it's there long enough, if it has antennae, two antennae and a waspish waist, then it will be a small solitary bee. And then there are huge solitary bees as well. The giant solitary bees, you know, the size of bumblebees, that few and far between, they're carpenter bees. But the other sort of bees that so many people have noticed for the first time this summer, and I'm thinking, wow, these bees are really letting people know that they're there, are leafcutter solitary bees. And if you have, so that there are clues and evidence, if you have leaves in your garden, and they might be roses, wisteria, evening primrose, rose bay, willow herb, and if they have tiny little neat semicircles nibbled out of them, and what the leafcutter solitary bee does is it won't nibble a little bit from each leaf, it will nibble a lot of little semicircles from each leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And that means you've got leaf cutters in your garden, and they use these leaves to line their nests before they then provision their nests with pollen, nectar and lay eggs, and block them off with leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have anyone who puts up a bee hotel, you know, I hope anyone who's listening to this, if you're looking for something to buy someone, you know, as a gift this year, or, you know, if you do Christmas and you want to buy someone a perfect Christmas present, buy them a bee hotel or make them a bee hotel. If you look up bee hotel, mm-hmm. it's basically home, a B&B for bees. If you look it up, there's lots of instructions on the internet and lots of places you can buy them. And if you put one of these up on a south-facing wall, you will get solitary bees. You'll get mason bees and leafcutter bees, and you will be mesmerized because you can watch them close up as they build the nests. They don't sting. They have a form of a sting, but it doesn't penetrate human skin. So they're incredibly safe if you've got children. And you can be you know, you can be a thumb's length away from them to watch them, and they won't be bothered. So, and solitary bees are amazing pollinators because they're messy. So honeybees and bumblebees, they collect their pollen, you know, in big sacks. You will have seen
Yes.
pollen sacks called corbicula on the back of their legs. Solitary bees, the sort that nest in bee hotels, the cavity nesting bees, they cover their abdomens underneath in pollen.
I've seen that, yes.
You've seen that. Well, that's, you've seen solitary bees then. You've seen a solitary bee. And once you start to recognize one or two,
Yes, you kind of think, what on earth are they, you know, what's happened? You know, if you don't know, you kind of think, what's happened?
this is
It's
what they're
covered
doing.
in pollen.
They're fantastic.
Yes.
And I mean, there's a whole world, you know, that the world of bees is fascinating. And you can even, what I do talks about bees. It's, you know, one, I raise awareness by doing talks for a couple of hours, or I do one day workshops as well to go deeper. And I write a lot of articles and a lot of internet campaigning I do. But one of the things that I always hope people will take away from my talks is that they'll be able to tell the difference between a male bumblebee and a female bumblebee. And
Okay.
this just so lovely, because if it's carrying pollen, it's a female bumblebee. If it is hanging around inside a flower and doesn't seem to have much to do, it could be a male. That's the first clue. It could be a male bumblebee, because the males do no work whatsoever. Once the males hatch out and leave the nest, they're not allowed back into the nest. So they do a lot of hanging out inside flowers. They sleep in flowers, and they sleep underneath flowers. If you have giant alliums, you'll often get three or four male bumblebees clustered underneath, sheltering at night time. And the other thing about the male bumblebees is that they have skinny, hairy legs, whereas the females have widened back legs that are shiny to collect the pollen. And then the final way, not all of our species, but most of our species of British bumblebee have facial hair. They have little yellow moustaches. And you can see they're tiny. You know, you maybe need to look through a camera lens or a larger, just a child's magnifying glass. If they have a yellow moustache, they are male bumblebees. And male bumblebees do not have a sting. They can't sting. But bees don't want to sting anyway. There's lots of people are frightened of bees. I don't know where that stems from, childhood or their parents saying, "Oh, be careful, there's a bee," or from wasps. I don't know. And
Yeah, people
people
get them
just think,
confused, don't
"Yeah,
they?
if it
So
flies and it buzzes, they think it's going to sting, but they don't."
yesterday I have a jasmine in my garden,
Yeah.
and it's almost finished flowering now, but yesterday I was walking back towards and I noticed there was a bee who appeared to be asleep on the
Oh.
jasmine flower. So that sounds like
It will have been a male bumblebee.
bumblebee, and I
Yeah.
kind of stood there and I thought, are you okay? And I just stood and I stood and nothing seemed to be happening at all. It didn't mind that I was there. I kind of moved the branch a little bit, and there's still nothing happening. And then I went back a little bit later, and it was gone.
Oh, it must have been
So it
having a
sounds
snooze.
as it was having a snooze. Yes.
And they do rest, then they rest inside flowers.
This one was actually sitting on a jasmine flower.
Oh, I look. Do you know the other thing you can about bumblebees is that if you are getting too close for their comfort, they will let you know, and they do this very politely by lifting one of their middle legs in the air.
Oh, wow.
It's called posturing, and
Okay.
so basically, you know, and you get two. I mean, this I'm always I have my camera lens quite close by, and if I'm taking a photograph and this only happens with bees that haven't got the energy to fly away. If a bee doesn't like you being there, it will fly away. It will not sting you. The only way a bumblebee will ever sting you is if you squash it by mistake, or if you try and dig up its nest. They are just they don't they have no aggression in them at all. But if you're too close and it can't fly away because it has no energy, it hasn't had enough nectar, or it's too cold, it'll raise its middle leg. And if you back off, it'll put its leg down. And if you move closer again, it'll raise its middle leg. If you go closer, it'll lift up its other middle leg. And if you go really close, it will put both of its legs right up in the air, sort of, you know, vertically up in the air and maybe roll over and show you its sting. But still, it won't sting you. It doesn't want to sting you. It's just posturing to say, hey, look, I'm a bee.
This is fascinating, isn't it? What you're showing us and what you're teaching people. You're teaching people the language of the bees, aren't
it
you?
Is
so that we can talk.
Yes, yes. And communicate and understand.
Yes, absolutely.
I understand. I'll back off now.
So that we can live alongside each other.
But you can also, you can communicate with honeybees, people, you know, natural beekeepers. I have some hives that, old hives. I wasn't going to keep bees in them because they're the sort of kind of hive that is more of a traditional way of keeping bees, and they're neglected and old and decrepit. But a colony of honeybees has moved in recently, and they are dark honeybees, dark native honeybees, because most honeybees in this country are Mediterranean European honeybees. If a honeybee is light in colour, and almost all of them are, then they are they're Mediterranean European honeybees. They're called Apis mellifera. But what we used to have in this country is our own native dark honeybee. That's Apis mellifera mellifera, and they have become all but extinct. But there are still some strongholds in Wales and I think in some islands of Scotland and in Cornwall, which is where I live. And so the bees that have colonized one of my old hives happen to be dark, really dark, which means that they've got a lot of native dark British honeybee in them, which is incredibly exciting. And various things happened with these bees. We didn't know they were there. Some friends of mine were helping me to clean out and clear and repair the hives, and that's when we found them, and they were dropped. My friend dropped them without knowing that there were even bees inside the hive, and they buzzed and, you know, they were very disturbed for a little while, and we had to leave them to settle, and it was pouring with rain. We had to go up to try and protect the queen from the rain, because, you know, bees live inside, honeybees choose to live inside the hollows of old trees, or inside chimneys, but basically safe, dry, dark places. That's what a honeybee wants. So we had to go and cover the space with a tarpaulin, which must have been terrifying for the bees. And we left them then to settle. And then the next day we had to go back up again. And I was actually not there that day. So my friends and two friends, he was quite nervous. And so we decided the best way was to go up and to talk to the bees, to tell them every single thing that my friends were doing. John and Lisa, they spoke to the bees. They said, right, now I'm going to do this. I know this is the last thing you want to do. You don't want to be subjected to even more movement. But what we're doing now is we're going to put you inside this box. We're going to replace one of the supers. We're going to put a new lid on. And once we've finished, you will be able to thrive again in this new home. So, you know, bear with us, you know, we're nervous as well. And I know when I came back, my friend said that they did. They spoke out loud to the bees whilst they did what they were doing. And it all went so well. And the bees weren't angry. They allowed all this to happen. You know, no aggression, no stinging. And they stayed there and they've settled and they're thriving now. So,
wonderful.
You know, this is why people love their honeybees. This is why people are attracted to beekeeping with honeybees. They all have their different personalities, these bees, and the different ways about them. But they're all in trouble.
So talk to us a little bit about the decline, which we do hear about a lot. But I know that you know much about this.
Yeah.
So it's a big subject, I know.
It's huge. It's very complex as well. So bees of all species are in decline for myriad reasons. You know, there is no one reason. There are lots of things. If I talk about the main reasons, really are habitat loss and pesticides. But I'll come back to those in a moment. That there are lots of introduced diseases now. They have problems with invasive species. There may or may not be a problem with mobile phones. There's no peer-reviewed scientific evidence to back this up, but you know, I have no doubt that the excessive amount of electronic pollution, you know, that's here and everywhere at the moment, is causing problems. Well, for everything really, but including probably bees, but those and climate change. We've seen the weather this year, you know, so bees are suffering when there's nothing, when they can't get out, they starve. If it's pouring with rain for days on end, they'll starve. Or if they start to get out and they start to build their colonies or their hives or whatever, and then we suddenly get 3 weeks of snow and ice, then again the plants are covered and they starve. Floods could flood out the bumblebee nests beneath the ground. So there's all of these problems with climate change. But then there's habitat loss. Habitat loss is enormous. We've lost some 98% of all of our wildflower meadows and grasslands since the end of the Second World War. So that's like our own Amazon happening here in the UK. And the impact on wild bees has just been phenomenal. So if you think back in the pre-1940s, the way that our land was farmed was what suited the farmers was also perfect for wildlife. It was like wildlife farming with rotations and integrated pest management and you know, everything all happening on the same farm. It was like a closed loop. You know, nothing came on or was taken off, really. It just worked beautifully. And then with the introduction of or the mechanization of agriculture and the intensification of agriculture, we've now got this crazy situation now where our countryside, it is, it may look green, but it's like a green desert. It's people still think, oh, this is beautiful, it's beautiful. They look out the train windows and think, wow, look at all this greenery. But it's a desert because it's just full of monoculture crops. And what's left in the way of what few wildflower meadows are left are fragmented and degraded anyway. So the bees, and this is not just bees, this is all of wildlife, and this is why we've got this crash, this decline in biodiversity. And if you lose the bees, bees are keystone species. Bees, without the bee, you know, bees are responsible for pollinating a good third of all of the food we eat. And also about 80% of all the flowering plants on the planet. So without the bee, the whole ecosystem crashes. And if you don't get the bees pollinating the plants, then the plants don't set seed. So you don't have seeds for the seed-eating birds. You don't have habitat for other insects. So if insect populations decline and crash, which they are doing, then there's nothing for the bats to eat and nothing for, you know, birds like swallows to eat, nothing for the frogs, for you know, other amphibians and reptiles. So this is all having a knock-on effect in our, you know, on all of our wildlife. So that's habitat loss, and then pesticides is the other issue, and this is something that I do a lot of campaigning. In particular, that there's a very, very nasty new group of pesticides called neonicotinoids. Some people pronounce it neonicotinoid. It doesn't matter how you pronounce it. That they are. We used to have pesticides. So pesticides were introduced in the 1960s, and there was an amazing woman called Rachel Carson who wrote a book in the 60s called Silent Spring, which is was saying, you know, look, this is what's going to happen to our countryside if we keep using pesticides. It's unsustainable, and her book is as important today as it was in the 60s. And basically we started off by spraying crops after there was an infestation. So it was reactive, a little bit like, you know, you get something wrong with you and you try everything else and then eventually you resort to antibiotics. Mm-hmm. And this is what used to happen with pesticides. Eventually you resorted to pesticides. But moving on now, you know, 40, 50 years, what we now do is farmers use pesticides and so fungicides, insecticides and herbicides. They're all used prophylactically, which means we are applying them in advance just in case there might be an infestation, which is a little bit like giving your children antibiotics for 12 months of the year in case they mix with someone with a throat infection in October. So we're doing this, and then we are also using this new type of pesticide called a neonicotinoid, which is a neurotoxin, so it's a nerve poison, and it's used systemically. And a systemic pesticide, and there are many of them, but the neonicotinoids are systemic. And what that means is that it is used, it coats the seed of the plant, or it's used as a soil dressing, so it's put in the soil, and anything that's grown in that soil, or any seed that's been coated with the neonicotinoid pesticide, when the plant grows, the entire plant takes up the pesticide systemically through its systems, all of its, through its vascular system. And so it's in the roots and the stem and the leaves and the flowers and the pollen and the nectar. And it can't be washed off. And when an insect comes to pollinate it, of course, it's taking the pesticides company will say is taking a sublethal amount, so one dose, sublethal dose, from the pollen and the nectar, and it's taking this back to the hive or back to the nest beneath the ground or back to the bee hotel if it's a solitary bee or you know wherever it's living, and it's feeding the larva on this pollen that has got high concentrations of neonicotinoid in it. And this is causing, because it's a nerve poison, a neurotoxin, it's causing at the very least for bees to become disorientated and they can't find their way back to the hive. So with a honeybee, the beekeepers will open their box and they've got, you know, everything looks great. There's a queen, there's lots of brood, you know, lots of cells full of bee larvae, and they're all dead. And they're dead because the workers have gone out and not been able to find their way home with the food. So that's one way. And they also, they impair an insect's ability to groom each other or to groom themselves. So they can't groom off the mites. So they're falling, they're more susceptible to things like the varroa mite, which is another big killer of honeybees. And then at the very least, it's impairing their immune system. So they're not able to fight off diseases either. So all in all, this is, this would be a problem even if it were just on a few plants in our back gardens. But these pesticides are the world's most widely used pesticides, the neonicotinoids, and they use them on at least a third of all the UK's arable crops. So if you see, and if it's not organic, and it's rapeseed or sugar beet or sunflower or all of our winter oats, barleys, wheats, although the bees don't pollinate them, that they are all coated in neonicotinoids. Wow. All the corn. So this is an enormous, this is a disaster in the making. This is an enormous, enormous problem. It cannot be, you know, I can't overstate how horrible these particular pesticides are. And they're now combining, you know, because they're combined with fungicides, and that makes them even more powerful. And the bees are just, you know, honeybees are dying in their billions. Bumblebees are also being affected. There was some research done 2 years ago by Stirling University, and they basically took three groups of bumblebees. They had a control group and two other groups, and they had 75 colonies in all. And they divided them into three lots of 25. And the control group had no exposure to neonicotinoids. And then the next group were exposed to field realistic doses of neonicotinoids, the sort that a bee would pick up if it was foraging in the countryside. And the third group were given double the dose. Now, they went through their life cycles, and the bumblebee life cycle basically starts in spring when they come out of hibernation, the queens. And then the queen will create a nest. She'll lay eggs. They will become her worker bees. The nest will grow and grow and grow. And its whole aim is to produce males and daughter queens in the late summer So what you have in the control group, the group that were had no exposure to neonicotinoids, on average, they produced 13 new queens. So that's a good, you think, okay, that's a good healthy number of queens. That's normal. Mm-hmm. Then the group that were given field realistic doses of neonicotinoids, they produced 2 new queens on average per colony. And the group that were given double the doses produced 1 new queen. So you've got an 85% reduction in requeening. And that's, you know, you don't, a primary school child could tell you that that's going to wipe the honeybees out if it continues. So that research is very important.
You're listening to the Nature Connection show on Natural Health Radio with Sarah Turner of Essentially Flowers Training and Moonflower Essences. Your weekly connection direct to the heart of nature. I would imagine most of the listeners to Natural Health Radio are going to be people who are aware and also who care about doing what we can to change this around. So what can we do to help?
Looking at the bigger picture, so with the habitat loss, it's easy. It's so easy. It's unbelievable. Plant more flowers. But, yes. You know, I'm thinking anyone who's listening to this show is going to think, yay, great, permission to plant even more flowers.
Yes.
You know, go out, plant for England, plant for the world. Yes. Choose your flowers carefully.
Yes.
Look, if you're in a garden centre, look for the plants that have attracted bees.
Yes.
If nothing else, plant blue. Bees see blue. They see in ultraviolet, not infrared. Mm-hmm. All of the Mediterranean herbs are fantastic. Anything that's blue, violet, purple, lilac, as long as it's not double-headed, choose loads of different shaped flowers. There's no point just planting daisies. You need tubes, tunnels, funnels, daisy-like flowers, or legumes, traditional cottage garden flowers, dandelions. Let your dandelions be, you know, honestly, dandelions are actually really good for the bee's immune system as well. The pollen is good for the immune system. So have a variety of flowers, plant them in large clumps, and most important of all, try to have something flowering throughout the year. This is the problem in the countryside, is the, you know, the monocrops are flowering just in June or just in July, and that's no good because the bees can't reach that time of year, or else after that time of year they, you know, they've got nothing else. So flower wise, just whatever your garden, you know, if you've got a window box, put lavender in your window box instead of petunias. And plant, if you're a vegetable grower, you know, this is great anyway, you know, interplant and companion planting is fantastic anyway. So do as much of this as possible. That's on the flower side. That's easy. That's
it
easy.
Is easy.
Do that.
Yep.
Do that this weekend.
Yes.
And then with the pesticides, it's first of all, don't use them. You know, if you were using them, stop. You may have a 3-year period where your garden adjusts, and you will lose a lot of your flowering plants in the first year because nature needs to rebalance itself. But all it takes is 3 years, and on the 3rd year, you'll have attracted the predators back into the garden, you know, and it will just take care of itself, and your balance will return. So watch when you're buying potted, you know, flowers in pots from garden centres. Ask in the garden centres. Say, do you know if this compost has been treated with neonicotinoids? You know, yes. Is this compost pesticide free? They won't know the answer. If they don't know the answer, if enough people ask, they will go up their line, you know, the chain of line managers until someone says, oh, for goodness sake, we're going to have to look into this. Just like the battery chicken thing. Mm-hmm. Enough people started asking, where do these eggs come from? you know, the laws changed. So be a bit of a pest, be very un-British and ask lots of questions. Buy organic, you know, it doesn't have to be certified organic, but if it's organically grown, collect your seeds yourselves. Take seeds from neighbours' gardens, you know, say, can I have some of your seeds? Can I have some of your cuttings, please? If you haven't been using pesticides, you know, this is how you can, and this is also, this regains the power, you know, it brings back the seeds to the people as well, rather than allowing the multinationals to control the seed supply. So if you get it right for bees, you get it right for all life on earth. And the other thing is rediscover the activist in you. You don't have to go and, you know, chain yourself to railings or go on marches with banners. You can write letters to your MP, write letters to your garden centres and your supermarkets and the DIY short stores saying, you know, are you aware that some of the products you're selling contain substances that kill bees? You know, I'd like you to consider removing them from your shelves, please, politely. And sign petitions. People often think, oh, you know, there's two things about petitions. There's no point just signing a petition. That's like being an armchair activist. If you just sign the petition rather than also plant flowers and stop using pesticides, that's just part of the you know, it's part of the battle. But signing petitions may not reach, it may not influence the government in itself, but when the journalists discover that 3 million people signed the Avaaz petition asking our government to ban neonicotinoids, then it's reported in the mainstream press, and that starts to influence, you know, the garden centres. People start thinking, oh, maybe I'll take this off my shelves. So it's being informed. Or you could also, one of the charities that one of my favourite charities that I would support is a charity called Bug Life, and they are a very small charity, and they're boxing way above their weight on this issue, and they do so much behind the scenes, you know, and in the way of education and research to try and get on top of this issue. And they have been doing so since about 2008, 2009. So they're a charity to support. And, you know, all of these things, it all adds up. And it's basically being there.
It's important for us to know this, because but we hear so much of the negative side of it on the media. And we do feel disempowered. So knowing that it's actually quite easy.
It is.
All the things that you've just explained there, it's very easy and very pleasurable for people to do. And probably a lot of it we're already doing, but if we can just focus it, as you say, by choosing the right colours, different shapes, and just doing it with awareness and consciousness.
Yeah. I have a lot of information about this kind of thing on my blog. My blog is Bee.
Yeah, so please tell us all a little bit how people can find out more about you. I know you've got a lovely website and you run courses, so tell us how we can find out more.
So first of all, there's my blog. I write articles on my blog, and I always I say, this is the problem, this is why it's a problem, this is what we can do about it. So I always put end on a this is what you can do note. But then separately, my website, I've got a website. I've moved to Cornwall, and I've taken on responsibility for what used to be my marital home. It's long story, I won't go into that, but I've moved back, and I have this giant, fantastic, beautiful old Cornish farmhouse and about 3 acres of land, and I've renamed it Bumblebee Farm, and my website is called Bumblebee Farm, and I've turned the oldest part of the house, you know, some parts of it are medieval, I've turned it into a B&B. And so everything I do with the B&B is everything is natural and organic and locally sourced. And I love looking after my guests. I get such lovely guests. It's amazing. In fact, some of them are out doing some digging in my garden at the moment, which is great.
Wow.
I know, it's seriously so lovely. But the gardens I'm turning into a haven for wildlife and a wild beast sanctuary. And what I want, so I've got mini meadows, window boxes. You don't have to have 3 acres. I want to demonstrate that you can do, this is what you can do with a window box. This is what you can do with a small lawn. This is what you can do with a middle-sized back garden. And so it's already thriving. I feel I've had this call to come back here, and I've only really come back here because the house won't sell. But I know that the land wants me back here, and it's responding.
Absolutely, the bees are
Oh,
behind it all
it's
there.
incredible, absolutely incredible. And I have lots of old barns and outbuildings. So I'm running courses and workshops here about bees, about biodiversity, about plant-based cookery, how to make a wooden spoon, foraging, bushcraft. I've got an amazing friend, someone called Rachel Corby, who wrote a book called The Medicine Garden. And we're chatting at the moment about her running a course teaching people. She's a plant shaman. She connects. In fact, you should talk. You should get her on your show, Sarah.
I
She's
think
just
that would be a great
incredible.
idea, yes.
I'll put you in touch with her. But she's going to be running, hopefully, a 1 year long diploma course. So that people would come 4 times a year to learn about reconnecting with plant, the world of plants, and yoga retreats. Basically, lots of people who live locally and have contacted me and said, "Look, I'd love to come and run a course at Bumblebee Farm." I'm in the process of getting them all together to put on the website. So I'm hoping they'll be all up and on the website by within the next week or so,
So it's
basically.
very encouraging for you, isn't it, with your decision to do
Yes.
what you're doing, that you're getting so many people coming to you and
Oh, yeah.
expressing their joy at what you're doing and
Yes.
supporting you. So I've learnt loads, and I really do mean that by listening to you. I will look. I'm a little bit of a very amateur but keen photographer.
Oh,
So obviously with a camera, we're
yeah.
going to be able to see an awful lot more, aren't we? As long as we need to watch out for the middle leg coming up.
Watch the middle leg coming up.
And but most of all, what touches me about listening to you is how you expressed, and I think many of us know this just inherently inside us, that the bees are the heart, or part of the heart of the planet. And that's what's so important about their message to you, to us, and the way that you're teaching us how to see into their world, and therefore to see our reflection in that. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I can't believe we've been talking for nearly an hour, Sarah.
Well, it's been really, really informative, and thank you
That's
so much,
lovely.
Bridget. Okay,
Thank
thank you.
you.
Bye
Thank
bye.
you.
And thank you to Bridget Strawbridge for that great interview. Do remember to go and check out her website. Or she has some great videos on YouTube as well, and a blog, the details that were given out in the previous section of the programme. So we're going to be staying with bee energy for the rest of the show. And every show, I'm going to be featuring an essence of the week. And this week, I'm actually going to be talking to you and giving you an experience of the bumblebee essence. But before we actually buzz into that energy, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about essences, vibrational essences, what they are exactly. Many people confuse flower essences with essential oils. So first of all, they are not essential oils. They have no perfume. And therefore, they have actually no side effects because they don't work on the physical body. They're working on the vibrational aspects of the body. The most known flower essences are from the Bach system, BACH. Some people say Bach, some people say Bach. And you can find them in very well-known chemists, certainly within the UK, in many other countries as well. There are many, many producers of flower essences, and you're going to be meeting many of the producers through this show. So those are the most well-known vibrational essences. They are flower essences. They are made by taking the bloom or blooms of flowers and placing them in spring water in a bowl in the sunlight and left for several hours. The flowers are then removed, and what we're left with is water that has been imprinted with the message of the flower. And we're going to be talking again about this in future programs so that you can find out so much more about how flower essences are made and their wonderful, wonderful potential. The other main kind of essences that are you can get quite widely nowadays are gem essences, and they are made in very, very similar ways. The gem or the crystal is placed in water, usually in sunlight. This is the traditional method, left in the sunlight for several hours. The gem or the crystal is then removed. And again, what we're left with is water that has been imprinted with the message of the gem or the crystal. So those are the two main kinds of vibrational essence, and that's what we mean when we talk about vibrational essences. Again, remember, they have no smell and therefore they have no side effects. So very safe for all ages. They can be taken by tiny babies. They can be used during pregnancy, during illness. They can be taken by the elderly. Animals love them, and you can treat anything and everybody with flower and gem essences and vibrational essences. Now, there are other kinds of vibrational essences as well that are less well known. And examples are sound essences, there are channeled essences, colour essences, essences made in moonlight, which is something that I do myself through my own range, moonflower essences. And the bumblebee essence is an example of one of these other kinds of essences. Again, I'm going to be talking to you about that very, very shortly. But first of all, flower and gem essences and the other kinds of vibrational essences are not replacements in any way for medical treatment. So if you are concerned in any way about yourself, then please do go and speak to your doctor. Where they do come into their own beautifully is that they are able to accompany us when we do have to go through challenging periods of our lives, which may be connected through medical treatments or just life in general. So they can be used alongside very, very safely. But please remember that they are not replacements in any way. So let's talk about bumblebee essence. It's made by the wild earth animal essences. And you can find out more about them by going to their website, www.animalessences.com. The founder of Wild Earth Animal Essences is Daniel Maple, and they are made in Virginia in the USA. So they are made in a ceremonial process where the spirit of the animal or the insect or the bird is invoked and invited into the ceremony. And the ceremony, the energy of the ceremony, is actually recorded in a bowl of water that's present right in the middle of the circle. And that bowl of water is then used to make the essences, which are part of the wild earth animal system. There's many, many different animals and birds and insects, and they're a wonderful, wonderful range, really coming into their own right now as the planet changes. There are no animals or other creatures involved in any way in the making of them. As I said, they are all made ceremonially and shamanically. So bumblebee essence, what's it about? Well, you may know, and Bridget spoke to us about bumblebee, it's usually quite a big fellow and has tiny, tiny wings. And there's many arguments about whether bumblebees are really supposed to be able to fly or not. And that's not really something that I can talk about. But aerodynamically, it's quite questionable that such a big being that has such tiny wings is able to be quite so mobile and flexible and graceful. So bumblebee is a very strong energy. So it's basically about accomplishing anything that you thought was impossible. So it's a great essence to take for confidence, for fortitude, for strength. And for any time when your mind is going, no, I can't do that because I am too, you can put in the words after that, too old, too weak, it's too expensive, it's too far, it's too big, it's too small. And our mind really limits what we think we are able to do. And taking Bumblebee really, really helps us to step into that place. And there are so many testimonials of people who've taken Bumblebee and accomplished really quite extraordinary things. I've had experiences myself, just quite daily experiences, when I've had a really challenging day in front of me and I've really thought that it wasn't going to be possible to accomplish what I needed to do. By taking Bumblebee Essence, you find yourself at the other end of the day and you think, wow, how did I do that? And so it has this effect of really lightening the load of the day and really just allowing us to step into a place of being able to accomplish really things that we didn't think we could. I often suggest it to my students doing the diploma when they get into phases of feeling not able to accomplish whatever it is that they're going through in their lives. And again, it really, really is such a helpful essence to help, really help us go into those realms of stretching ourselves into what we are truly, truly capable of. And as our planet changes and we are now really being asked to step into such much larger energies of who we are, to stop being limited by small time energies of who we thought we were, it's a really, really important essence. So one way of using Bumblebee Essence is you just take a couple of drops from the bottle that you're able to get from Wild Earth Animal Essences and you place it in a glass of water or your bottle of water, and you just sip it throughout the day. It's very, very, very safe. If you'd like to come on to the Natural Health Radio Facebook page and record your experiences or ask any questions, I'd be really happy to help you use Bumblebee, and it'd be really fabulous as well to hear your stories. So I'm going to very shortly take us all through a very a quick visualization inviting in the bumblebee energy. Now, for reasons, as we're going into a visualization, if you're driving or operating machinery of any way or not able to be present within yourself, please don't do this. You can come back to it at a later time when you can bring your full attention. The visualization is signaled by a short piece of music at the beginning and at the end so that you can hear it very, very clearly. So I will be back very, very shortly. So if you are able to put down whatever you're doing right now, sit down. It's just going to take a few minutes and we're going to invite the bumblebee energy in to help us achieving something that we thought was not possible. I'll see you in a moment. We're now going to begin the bumblebee visualization, so please, if you're able to, stop what you're doing and take yourself and sit down somewhere comfortable where you can place your feet on the floor and just allow yourself to settle for a few seconds, and let's just do some very simple breathing exercises together. So sitting with your feet on the floor, with your spine straight, and take in some deep breaths. Just breathe in through your nose, breathe out through your mouth. As you breathe out, just let your shoulders drop and just allow yourself to feel yourself sitting in the chair. Just allow yourself to relax. So take some more deep breaths. So breathe in and count to three. And breathe out and count to three. And breathe in once more, and this time count to four. And breathe out, and again count to four. And breathe in and count to five. And breathe out and count to five. Five is the energy of the heart space. It's the heart chakra is the fifth chakra in the main chakra system. So let's just allow that five vibration to settle. And what I'd like you to do is staying very present with your breath. It's just to dream your biggest dream. Now this could be something that you'd like to accomplish in the future. So we could be talking next year, it could be next month, it could be next week. For some of us, it might just be in the next minute. So whatever your biggest dream is, just allow that in to come and settle into you. Something that you really feel or have felt that was not possible for you to achieve. Just allow that in. We're now entering a time where the energies are really supporting us to move out of the limits of the mind and into the expansion of the heart. So just allow that to happen. And at the same time, you can allow the mind in to come in and say, "Well, you can't do that. It's not possible because it's too far, or you're too old, or you're too young, or you're too sick, or it's too expensive, or there's not enough time, or there's too much time." Or whatever the mind limits you with, just allow that to come in because it's important right now. So on one hand, hold your biggest, biggest dream, your wildest dream, and also allow the mind just to come in and tell you why you haven't achieved that so far. So just being allowing yourself to be present with those two voices, if you like, but giving more energy, more focus to the heart dream. And in that space, let's invite Bumblebee in, the energy of Bumblebee. Now, as you heard from Bridget, much of what she's learned is through actually just being with the bees and allowing them to inform her of what she needs to know. And they're actually teaching her through presence, through her heart, through just being alongside them. So as the energies change now, we are being invited into this space where we can actually partake of Bumblebee medicine just by inviting that energy into our hearts. So in whatever way that feels relevant for you right now, invite in the bumblebee. You might visualize one, you might hear the sounds that they make, or you might take yourself out to where you have met them in nature. You might watch them in a plant, whatever feels right to you. Just allow that energy to come in to inform. And when you feel that energy is present within you, when you have a sense of the bumblebee, ask how bumblebee energy can help you take the first steps towards achieving this beautiful, beautiful vision that you've invited in that belongs to your future. Invite it in. Allow the bumblebee in the present now to join the future, the dream that feels more in the future energies. Allow those two things to start to join together. Allow the bumblebee energy just to inform you as to what you can do next, or what needs to be done next in order to support you in this vision. Now, you may find instant inspiration, but very often with this kind of thing, especially if the mind is quite noisy, we often find that if we just allow that energy to inform us and know that it has informed the heart energy, and then just allowing, accepting that you don't actually maybe know just now how to go forward. And as you go about your next tasks, having listened to this, now it could be later on, or it could be tomorrow, or even next week, or a later date, or maybe in a dream, you will find that some inspiration will come in and you'll know that it was a message from the bumblebees. So just staying in that heart space now of this, allowing in the steps needed for you to achieve the biggest, biggest vision for you in your life. This is the potential of vibrational medicine. And just breathing in that energy, allow it to fill your lungs, allow it to fill all the different cells in your body. Breathe it right down to your fingertips, all the way down to your toes. And let's say thank you to Bumblebee for giving us this precious knowledge. And you're going to hear some music again shortly, which will signal the end of this visualization. Thank you so much for coming on this very first show of the Nature Connection show on Natural Health Radio. My name is Sarah Turner. I look forward to seeing you all next week, where I will be interviewing another guest who also works through the heart space with the Nature Kingdom. If you have questions that you would like me to answer regarding flower essences, then please come on to our Facebook page, Natural Health Radio page on Facebook. I'd be happy to answer them. Until then, many blessings to you from the Nature Kingdom.